5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
All right, lift off and the clock has started. Yes, sir, reading you loud and clear.
Ask a rocket scientist.
Oxygen, go. All systems are go.
Welcome to this very special edition of Ask a Rocket Scientist. We are talking about the science of Star Wars. Very excited that episode 9 is out in theaters, The Rise of Skywalker. Let me get this out right at the very beginning. No spoilers. So we are not going to be spoiling. Now we're going to talk about episode 9, things that happen in it, but not in any spoilery way. Trust me, because I'm sitting here with my good friend Bill, the rocket scientist. Hey, Bill.
How's it going, Chuck?
So let me ask this. Have you seen the movie yet?
Not yet.
See, that's why we're not going to spoil it, because Bill hasn't seen it yet. And that would take all the fun out of it.
And I'd beat you with the microphone.
That's right. I would be flogged to death with my own microphone. I would pay for my own demise. And the fun thing is, today we're also joined by a special guest. My good friend Keith Gehring is here. Keith, hello, man.
Hey, Chuck.
So aside from being a Star Wars geek, what else do you bring to the table?
I really don't know, because I'm a social scientist, so we'll find out. Although I do believe Phantom Menace brought up many, many interesting plot twists with governance, galactic governance, and tax treaties and trade federations. So, you know, hey, maybe.
Keith is bringing his own special expertise of the financial systems and treaties and things in the Galactic Empire. So we're definitely going to dig in way deep on that minutia here in a little bit. But we want to talk about the science of Star Wars, and this is Star Wars as a whole. One of the very first things I want to ask Bill is laser guns.
Laser guns.
How do laser technically blasters?
Well, let's be clear here.
Yeah, they do not actually travel at the speed of light, right?
I don't know. Bill's the man. Let's fire this up.
Excellent question. Yeah, okay. So sci-fi guns. If you look at a laser weapon today, and I'm thinking like a really large one, like an airborne laser where they can shoot down ballistic missiles, mm-hmm. I don't think you even see the laser, as far as I know.
Right.
I mean, it's a chemical laser. It fires. It's infinitely fast.
Yeah.
You don't see a bullet or a beam of any sort. Next, all you see is that rocket on the other side of the hemisphere is getting blown up.
Yeah. Well, it's like you and I talked in a previous episode how Russia is coming up with lasers to shoot space debris out of the sky, like satellite debris that's up there floating around. So
and
Russia,
potentially other satellites, but yeah.
Well, we're not going to disparage.
let's leave the Chinese out of this.
Okay. Yeah, we're going to stay out of geo-global politics, although that is your specialty. We're going to talk about the fact that Russia wants to shoot satellite chunks out of the sky to help, you know, protect the satellites that are already up there. But to your point, So with the blaster, how would you fire a beam of laser that you would then be able to see?
And not have it go the speed of light. Mm-hmm. And that makes me think, are they using a laser to heat a slug of some sort and then fire this slug, and that's what you see mm-hmm. coming out of the gun? That's where you get the cool color and the kind of more I guess dramatic slow speed bullet flying across mm-hmm. the screen.
So what you're saying is that these blasters are firing projectiles. Possibly? Is that what you mean by a slug?
Possibly. Yeah, right. In that sense, yeah. I guess that'd be a better description of what I was...
Okay.
Of the laser heating a slug. Slug goes firing. Oh, look, it's glowing blue or red. Why are there different colors? I don't know.
Well, because it's evil, the Empire, and the good guys also have their, right, Keith?
Absolutely.
That's how this works. And same thing with lightsabers. Everybody's got their own special colored lightsaber, which we'll talk about in a few minutes. Okay, so, but blaster technology, completely unrealistic. Is it possible for us to channel the power of a laser in a pistol or a rifle gun type situation?
I would think it'd be awfully energy inefficient, to be honest. I don't know. Is a plausibility?
Yeah.
Could you do it? Well, maybe. But
if you have a weapon that'll melt somebody's face, I think energy inefficiency is not necessarily your biggest concern, right?
You're going Dr. Evil on me here, Chuck.
Hey, somebody's got to.
You could. I mean, if you think of like a small chemical laser or something that could fire an energy weapon, mm-hmm. you know, maybe something closer range. I don't know how. Now, functionally, I don't know how this would work.
Got it. Okay. So we're not going to mount them on our ships to Mars, right?
No.
We're not going to be able to have laser cannons and things like that just in case.
We didn't put them on Orion.
You would or wouldn't?
We did not.
Okay.
Orion is an exploration vehicle, so...
We come in peace.
If you're talking the first vehicle we're going to send outside the Earth-Moon system, it's unarmed.
You don't want it to be heavily armed.
No.
Sends a bad message.
Or the right one.
I guess that's true. Okay, so one of the other questions that I had was about, let's talk about, okay, there's a couple things I want to, the Starkiller Base. which was in The Last Jedi. In essence, it's a planet that can suck out the life of an entire sun.
Force Awakens, just for clarification.
Oh, was it Force Awakens? Yeah. Oh, yes. Sorry. Last Jedi was the slow speed chase. We're going to talk about that as well.
Yes.
All right. So Force Awakens, Starkiller Base. Thank you, Keith. That's why Keith is here.
Value add.
Yeah.
Quality control.
Yeah. Thank you. Well, we definitely need it. Marlin the cat isn't around to handle us, so Keith is here in his place.
Licking himself. Not me, the cat.
Well, I wasn't going to get personal, Keith, but... So Starkiller Base from The Force Awakens, thank you, is able to suck up the energy of sun and contain it briefly and channel that into a weapon. So I'm assuming that that is completely implausible, but it asks the question, is it possible for us here on Earth, if we were able to get close to the sun, to find a way to suck more of its energy, bring it back to Earth as solar power, like as super advanced solar power energy here?
Can I add a rider on that as well?
Please.
What always perplexed me is, in absence of the energy of a sun, you have this hollow shell, and that seems wildly implausible as well.
And dangerous.
Yeah.
As we've talked about the potential of black holes.
There's a containment field, but then there's also the absence of a thing to contain.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Can't be good for a planet's integrity.
No. Yeah, a little stability issue there, I'd have to imagine. Well, my hunch is it would take more energy to pull the energy than you're ever going to get back out of it.
Got it.
You know, like in The Force Awakens, you know, they're pulling it across vast distances. Well, that doesn't happen by on its own. You're using energy to get the energy.
Right.
Right. So you might lose on the deal. I don't know of any way we could actually harvest it any faster than what the sun's already producing. And I don't know why you want to get any closer to the sun anyway.
Okay.
let's just call it right there. I mean, you're going next to, you know, something that's a hydrogen bomb that's constantly erupting or exploding, mm-hmm. you know, in perpetuity.
Right.
You know, I don't think you'd want to get much closer.
Yeah, but let's say if we were able to harness more of the sun's energy, if there was a way for us to do that, it would save our energy problems here on the planet Earth forever, right?
We could destroy other planets as well.
Well, again, you're taking it to another extreme that I'm not quite ready to go just yet. However, yes, we could dominate the galaxy if we were able to do this. But seriously, from a scientific aspect, is there something that we could put, like in Mercury's orbit, that is able to contain solar energy much better and then somehow bring it back to our planet to use?
Well, we did try to collect solar particles. Was it the Genesis mission? We actually did have a probe circling around with the intent of capturing solar particles.
Is that from Star Trek 2, the Genesis project?
No, I'm going to have to look up.
Inspired.
Inspired by, yes. I can't remember the mission. They were trying to collect solar particles, though, and bring them back to Earth because they don't survive out to here. That was where we had the probe successfully was out there for 5 years, collected them all. So on its way back to the Earth, everything went perfectly until it re-entered the Earth's atmosphere and the parachute didn't come out.
Whoops.
Yeah, oops. They did get some of the science out of it, but it was a really simple mistake. The accelerometer that was supposed to hit the Earth's atmosphere that triggered the parachute to come out was mounted in the wrong orientation. So the parachute never came out.
Okay.
But.
Well, that's a mistake.
Yeah, that was an oops. But part of it did survive the impact it cratering into the Earth. Like one of the containers still made it. So we did get some of the science back out of it. But in that case, you're not actually harvesting energy. They were just trying to see what kind of particles like come out of the sun at close distance.
Okay, gotcha. So they were just kind of investigating.
Yeah. And and those, you know, didn't have any magical energy properties of sorts. It was you know, they're actual just they wanted to see what they would get.
Right. You know? Right. So the possibility of us building a craft to contain the entire power of our sun and then channel it into blasting other planets across like the fact that
I think we're 0-2 on this, Chuck.
Yeah,
no blasters, no Starkiller bases.
Sorry, we're blowing the whole Star Wars universe out of the water right here.
All
right,
there goes my childhood.
I was going to say, well, I don't know if I should bring up lightsabers yet because I don't think I can take a third disappointment.
I thought I read something that lightsabers were conceptually sound, and I have no idea the physics behind it, but I thought I read something that you could actually contain light by a limited distance and continually circulate that through, but I don't know. That's probably
Bill
Googleable.
I hadn't read that.
There you go.
That's awesome.
All right, Keith, and you're the expert here.
No, geez, what you just heard was the extent of my knowledge. If anything, I wanted to go back and kind of answer Starkiller Base using yet more science fiction through Dyson spheres, you know, harnessing the energy through a series of satellites that would orbit the Earth, but definitely nothing that was contained within the core.
Well, let's go down that road. What are Dyson spheres?
Dyson spheres are a theoretical, or more than that, science fiction device that the thought is that ultimately the energy needs of the Earth would far outweigh our ability to harness energy here locally. And if we deployed a series of satellites that would orbit the Earth, even beyond that, orbit the sun at a massive distance from the Earth. Mm-hmm. Basically a lot of solar panels in space and then redirecting all of that solar energy back to the Earth.
Got it.
Yeah.
Okay. So in essence, because I've
more
heard
that, satellites.
Yeah. They're catching solar energy.
Right.
Like specifically dedicated to absorbing solar energy.
That's exactly right.
That's fascinating.
So a different route. I mean, other than just sucking the entire energy from the sun, which.
Yeah, taking what's coming at you anyway and channeling
Thank
a little
you.
Better.
Yes.
Yeah.
Sun's just steadily emitting all kinds of radiation, and this is a better way to harness it.
Most of it misses us. So if you want to think about it, it's like a solar reflector of sorts, just like we have the mirror farms out in the Mojave that can point towards a boiler. You're channeling energy much more efficiently that would otherwise just heat up the sand. Mm-hmm. You know, something like that might be a little more plausible if you had some sort of, I hate to say like a giant mirror, but something that says, hey, we're missing most of the energy coming off the sun. It's going in the rest of the sphere. You know, only a very small part hits the Earth. And maybe you could send some more of it our way. I know that might create other problems. You know, we're going to bake ourselves at that rate. But,
being able to contain and control the amount of solar energy that we capture and not go
focus
too crazy.
It back to the Earth.
Focus it to us without actually heating the Earth. Correct. Like you want to put it somewhere in the vicinity we could use to harness energy, but without causing, global heating and and cooking.
That is interesting.
Maybe we should shift this to the science in Star Wars that actually works. I'm not sure.
I don't know what that is.
I don't
is.
Know what it is either. I'm
well,
reaching here.
The AT-AT walkers, that's a bunch of hooey.
Cool.
Super cool.
Super
though.
Cool. But
super
wildly,
cool.
I mean, you put
not product pragmatic though.
No, you put
that's a terrible
the
vehicle.
Ordnance in the front, and it has a field of view that's about 40 degrees.
And they're prone to tripping.
Got prone to tripping.
They're clunky.
But they're cool. Oh,
you know, and who thought of in that moment of despair when you realized that there were massive protections on the AT-ATs that we can use our harpoon cables.
Let's
go old school.
I never
on
knew what we were going to use harpoon cables for on the planet of Hoth, but now we have a solution to the problem.
Yeah, and like, how bizarre is it that they just attach them to the ships anyway? Because you're right, on Hoth, it's relatively
cable.
Impractical.
Totally
right, unless you're hunting tauntauns and you're trying to spear them
overkill.
From space. A little overkill.
And did you do this on the premise an AT-AT could just happen to land on Hoth? Or are these spears already equipped with them? In which case, what did they use them for? Because they fired backwards. What did they use these for?
The sole job of the guy in back was to man the harpoon cable.
Yeah,
that's
I guess.
It?
That's
somebody who didn't make it with the best grades through flight school, I'm guessing.
No, he was definitely in the B team. So what I want to know is, with you two incredibly smart people here, why don't you call them AT-ATs? Because that's what they're called, right? AT-ATs. You guys are so funny with the AT-ATs. Who says that? Is it a TIE fighter?
It's
a TIE fighter.
Fair enough. We just didn't want to kind of sow any discontent in your community.
Right. I've heard it both ways. I'm not sure the right way.
Okay. All right.
But TIE, twin ion exactly. engine.
Twin
TIE is actually an acronym.
Engine. Yes, it is. It's great, especially in the new movie, seeing the armies of TIE fighters that are just coursing through the sky. And you get to see some of the classic Rebel crafts. No spoilers, but the X-Wing, the Y-Wing. I think I've said too much. Ooh.
I like that you bring up the classics because, I was debating this with my kids, whether or not these were just old vehicles like, the Millennium Falcon that never goes away, or if these were like the Mustang and Camaro of our day where they rebooted the TIE fighters and X-Wings.
So did you notice that the X-Wing evolved?
They split the engine.
Yes.
I don't know what is the benefit
of splitting the
engine.
And I read an article, and they actually had given it a different fighter designation.
That's
like
it's
an evolution thereof.
Right.
So I was like, it's not just the X-Wing of old.
It's the X-Wing version 2.0.
Yeah, instead of the F-16, it's evolved to the F-22 equivalent, right?
But to Keith's question, why does it, you're separating the engine just because it's
how
cool?
How does it help?
I don't know.
How does it help?
It can't possibly help with propulsion or anything like that because it's the same size engine, but it just looks awesome.
It's just a different way of opening up the X-Wings. And you have to ask yourself, in the big question, what advantage does splitting the wings open in space have? There's no air. They fly like airplanes in space.
I believe that's attack formation.
Is that going to? Because now you have lasers at four different points in space. Oh,
but they were already at four different points. But they were closer together.
Exactly.
So potentially there could be like a 3 meter difference between.
So it's the Womp Rat story of target like, make sure you got a bigger coverage or spread of firepower.
Hey, if you're hunting Womp Rats, you know.
And then another question that I've got from the very first one, which I'm just going to call Star Wars. I'm not calling it A New Hope. I'm sorry. I'm old enough to have seen it in the theater when it first came out. It's Star Wars.
It's the original.
How do you take a laser beam, a shot from an X-Wing, and then get it to go forward, and right at the last moment, shoot down into the tunnel?
They were proton torpedoes.
Right, so you have, so...
They were mass-bearing, and I think gravity sets in and then follows it right down that
chamber. Okay, so you had to fire the torpedo at exactly... Because that's why at one point one of them says, oh, it impacted on the surface.
That was that Y-wing pilot. Yeah.
It's away!
Negative.
It didn't go in.
Just impacted on the surface.
Yeah, he wasn't lying. Okay, so
or it was just bad, bad optics. It really was a straight fire, but the camera angle made it look like it went curved.
Okay, all right,
it did, did, curved and dropped in just like you were shooting hoops.
Okay, so the proton, the torpedo, that answers that question for me, which is
I think. But again, Luke through the Force had to interpret the mass distance, differences, mass, gravitational attraction, and throw and lob that pair, if I'm not mistaken, a proton torpedo.
That's right, two in
pair.
Yeah.
One, two, just like
where
that.
Where did two come from on the show?
Yeah.
Force. There you go.
Yeah. So, in essence, to equate this to modern day technology or society, if that's as if you were to take LeBron James and have him stand under one basket, close his eyes, and then throw the ball the entire length of the court. Through the hole, through the hoop, swishing it. Like, not even like rimming out or...
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, just shoop, and being able to do that. That's what Luke is capable of doing with the Force. That's how powerful
it's pretty.
Force is.
And what, he was like 12 days on the job?
Yeah.
I mean, just... I know. He's pretty fresh.
And he was still nursing that bruised shoulder from when he was training with the droid.
Right.
And it's like... And now, nothing but net. He's draining it from three-point land. Love it. All right, Keith, so do you have any questions that anything that's been bugging you? Because for me, like the torpedo, the whole thing about getting into the trench and the thing has been bugging me since 1977.
That's totally good, Chuck.
Anything else that
not to geek out in a social science way, but I'll be honest.
This is for.
I will be honest. When I saw the Starkiller base, these are all good points about, harnessing an entire energy of the sun. And there were really two things. First, the gauge for charging up Starkiller base looked like, it was like, we're at 82%, we're at 86%,
how you almost expect to see the spinning pinwheel of death.
I think that's exactly right.
Or better yet, unicycle. or better yet, we get the blue screen of death.
Power down.
This is the first test of a weapon system. They don't work right the first time.
No, of course not.
But genuinely, after seeing the bar and just thinking, come on, you can harness the power of an entire sun, but you still have this old tech that has to charge over a 20-minute period or what have you.
Yeah.
But genuinely, when I looked at Starkiller Base, the first thing I thought was, wow, that took a lot of taxes to build that sucker.
Who ended up paying for that?
Yes, that's exactly right. So the First Order is living in the shadows, kind of there but not there, and we have a full republic and all that. And somehow they're able to garner enough revenue to build a Starkiller. Go on.
Did you see The Phantom Menace?
Oh, geez.
They're dealing with taxations on the trade routes, right?
The trade routes. It all comes back to the trade routes.
I'm telling you, those are unresolved in all the rest of the movies. The very first thing that happens in any of the Star Wars movies chronologically, The Phantom Menace is the first movie, if you watch them in chronological order, is all taxation and trade routes. And that's never resolved.
We know why it's episode one.
Yeah.
It's all about trade routes and taxation.
Of course it is. And so I was really hoping, no spoilers, but that is kind of left hanging. That there isn't a lot of closure. I'm going to give you this. There's not a lot of closure to the trade route taxation theme at the end of Rise of Skywalker. For some reason, that kind of slips their mind. But that could be how they funded Starkiller Base.
And without spoilers, but yes, that question is still remains, if I can say that, in episode 9. So, yeah.
Yeah, and it's weird. So, but I think that answers your funding
issue. It's unanswerable.
Your funding issue, the First Order, has dealt with taxation. I mean, they're taxing all the trade routes.
So you're saying Palpatine was an accountant in his original incarnation.
He ascended into politics,
but at heart.
An accountant at heart. Yeah, evil mastermind.
Sith Lord, genetic manipulator. I think.
Well, an accountant deep down inside, side, you know. When he was in his teens, he was like, I'd really like to do accounting.
Jeez, if I could.
And his father said, no.
Yeah.
No.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You will learn to kill.
Yeah. It's like imagine Hermie from Rudolph of the Red-Nosed Reindeer wants to be a dentist, but he's not allowed to be a dentist. He has to be an elf. Same thing with Palpatine. He wanted to be an accountant, and he was never able to make that leap.
Well, you know, Hitler wanted to be an artist, and Palpatine, I guess, and an accountant, and the whole galaxy could have been spared a lot of trauma if he had just gone to Coopers and Lybrand, I guess. So
I'm telling you, had H&R Block expressed some interest in Emperor Palpatine.
Just emailed him back. It would have been.
Called and responded was called.
Yeah, just a little encouragement would have been nice. That would have been great.
Boy.
Okay, so another question that I had is from The Last Jedi. One of my favorite moments in that movie is the scene where Laura Dern, forgive me for not knowing her character's name, turns the ship and points it right at the Imperial ship and then hits warp drive and just detonates into the fact that that whole scene took place in total silence.
Mm.
Was amazing because I don't know if you remember when that movie was first in theaters, people went and they honestly thought that there was a problem with the screening because there was no sound. Yeah. People expected there to be, and it was the most realistic detonation in space that's ever been captured because in space, no one can hear you detonate.
That's right.
Or scream if you want to go back to Alien. But yeah, so I love that moment. But I had a friend of mine, his name's Terry, and Terry reached out and he said, so, and I'll ask you this, Bill, if you're traveling at light speed, and you slam into another thing, especially a ship as big as the Imperial ship and the Rebel ship colliding. His question is, wouldn't the Imperial ship just automatically vaporize, like completely, and then create such a repercussion that it would resonate for, you know, orbits, like a massive amount of space?
Yeah. I kind of look at this as like two possibilities.
All right.
You've got, if you're flying faster than the speed of light, I mean, the amount of energy you must have is immense. So are you just like, you know, hot knife through butter. You just...
Sure.
Like, there's not enough time to even capture the event. You're already, like, up and through it.
Right.
Before anybody even knows what happened. It sounds like there's a ship in two pieces.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one train of thought. Another one, to Terry's point, is, well, you've got this massive amount of energy. And is it something like slamming into a wall, right? And it's just going to hit, and it's just got to come out somewhere. And there's just going to be a massive release of energy and obliterate everything in the vicinity.
Yeah.
And I mean, you're talking, you know, sci-fi science here. My hunch is like at that point, time can't capture the event. You know, the ship in hyperspeed is just going to go right through anything. And they talk about this, like they're talking about like you can't just blindly hit light speed. You don't know their path. You know what's in your way. And if you look at just the sci-fi world, universe in general, there are books that talk about this no ends about how they have to have, you know, remote probes out there that are constantly scanning to make sure the warp avenue is safe so they can do this. Because otherwise, they're just going to blast into something they don't know is in the way.
Yeah, because if there's some errant comet or an asteroid belt that we don't know about.
Anything is going to be lethal at that speed.
Got it.
Now, the flip side of that is space is really, really sparsely populated with anything. So if you're going to play the population game, or the population game, the probability game.
Yeah. Chances are good.
Chances are good you're going to fly
by.
You got a clear shot.
Yeah. However.
Yeah.
And so, okay, so to answer Terry's question, because the question is once the two ships collided, or once the one ship plowed through the other ship, there's no possible way that Finn and Rose could have survived with the, I forget what the character's name is, the not Kylo Ren, but the soldier played by Anne.
The chrome suit.
Yeah, the really badass looking woman in the stormtrooper suit.
Captain Phasma?
Yeah.
Phantasma?
No, I think
Phasma?
I think it's Phasma.
Keith, I think it's Phasma.
Way downtown. Yeah. We're going to Google that while we're talking. But anyway, there's no way that they would survive, correct? There's no way.
Well, I think they have an opportunity if we invoke the first hypothesis, the hot knife through butter. In that in that sense, you have a surgical cut through the Star Destroyer. And as long as they aren't on that vector, they're totally fine.
Got it.
If, in fact, they're probably better off than what the movie actually portrayed, because obviously instability sets in and the whole thing starts to deconstruct and there's a wake of debris and all that other good stuff. And in this, if we again employ the first hypothesis, they're actually better off. I mean, it's nice, clean, and other than that corridor.
Yeah. Like a hole the size of the other ship just suddenly got punched into
So in essence, like a knife through butter, you're saying, it would cleave its way through the ship, right through the middle.
Almost evaporate.
But then the difference between a hot knife through butter and this is that the hot knife through butter is not going to then detonate the entire stick of butter and everything else in your
kitchen. Second order consideration.
Right. Well, now you've severed fuel lines. Now the ship's just going to blow up on itself.
Warp core is definitely unstable at that
point.
Right,
yeah, right. Yeah. You've caused some structural instability there. It's got to work itself out.
A bit of a world of hurt. Okay, so then let's talk about light to speed one a quick time, because in the new movie, again, no spoilers, but there is a moment where somebody attempts to do what they call, I think, light speed jumping, which is they're trying to evade pursuers. And so to get away, they fire light speed. They just start, they turn on light speed and then they take off. And then, of course, as soon as they come out of light speed, they're right in the middle of an asteroid field and they have to steer through. It's like, oh, my goodness. And
no spoilers.
No. And then, of course, they're still being chased because the people behind them also.
Of course.
And then so they have to light speed jump again just to random locations. So, again, to your point, without mapping this out ahead of time, there are some risks.
Oh, yeah.
To light speed jumping, correct?
It's not like dusting crops back home, boy.
Back home, boy. No.
Back to the mob rats.
So, okay. So light speed jumping is...
I would say it would be foolhardy.
Yeah. Okay.
Don't just gun it. This is kind of a Tony Stark Iron Man sort of philosophy, right?
Mm-hmm.
You don't need that map. Let's just punch it.
Yeah. Punch it. See what happens. And just trust.
Yeah.
I guess that's what they're doing. Okay, so Bill, so we have an update on the Captain,
it's Captain Phasma.
Captain Phasma. Keith.
Yeah, come on in. Points to Keith.
Julie Christie, the actress, right? Now we need you to look that up.
Now I got
to
look this up again.
Because I think I remember it was Julie Christie, and wasn't she in Game of Thrones? I'm not a Game of Thrones fan. Yeah, I think we're out of our element on that
one.
But yes, we're going to rest on Captain Phasma. Everything else we've said could be horribly wrong, but Keith, nicely done.
Can I ask a question?
Please, of course. That's why we're here.
On Captain Phasma, so the entire demise of Starkiller Base rests on the shoulders of Captain Phasma, who was taken at gunpoint and instructed, you're going to shut down the shield or else.
Yeah.
And
she did it.
And she just, you won't get away with this. That was the, you won't get away with this.
That was her retort. It's like, well.
I think they did.
But then also, if you're shutting down the thing, they don't really need to get away because they've accomplished their thing. They're going to destroy Starkiller Base and save the galaxy. So not getting away with it, like, okay, so they're going to die on the base as well? All right, well, but hey, we screwed your plan.
You won't get away with this. That's all. I mean, that just resonates.
That's it.
And if I'm not mistaken, again, coming at it from the social sciences, if I'm not mistaken, Captain Phasma was a paragon of order. I mean, there was no way there was no way that Finn could have been a traitor, right? I mean, that was like the party line was, there's no way that any of my stormtroopers would ever break ranks. And just as soon as a blaster is pointed at Captain Phasma, the whole project's over.
She's like, oh wait, no, what I meant was, what do you guys need?
Yeah.
How can I help? Am I going to get out of here alive? That would be sweet.
Well, you got to go to the Fatal Flaw and all these super Death Star type devices they keep building. It's like, why is it a janitor knows the super flaw to all of this?
Yeah.
It seems like every single one has just a really dumb flaw.
See, Solo even acknowledged that. Coming in at, you know, in 70 plus and you know, he's debriefed on the situation. There's a Starkiller base. Well, there's got to be some flaw in there somewhere.
Yeah, of course.
And he's right.
And he's absolutely
totally right.
I mean, but to Bill's point, Finn is like such a low hanging fruit when it comes to the stormtrooper. He has no power whatsoever, but he knows exactly where to go. Is every single stormtrooper trained with, all right, here's how we kill people. Here's how we torture. Oh, by the way, if you ever want to blow up the place, we shouldn't do this.
Do not destroy this.
This big red button.
Don't push it.
Yeah.
Even the guys in sanitation, do not do this. Absolutely.
When you guys are cleaning on this button, don't push it.
So I guess Captain Phasma was right in the training, less so on the discipline within ranks. So, okay, give her that.
In practice, yeah.
Yep, there you go.
I love it. Okay. So let's get back to the trade routes. Now, I'm fascinated.
That's when Star Wars died for me, is, you know, we're sitting there in the Galactic Senate and we're going through procedural. And I think The Simpsons lampooned this back, I don't know, soon after Phantom Menace came out. But you know, they're doing roll call in the Galactic Senate. And that's when Star Wars died for me. I thought, this is it. This is where we've arrived at Senate procedures.
Yeah. We've gone from Jabba the Hutt and Boba Fett and IG-88 and the Cloud City and Lando Calrissian, and now we're sitting here
listening to roll call in the Galactic Senate.
I don't know. I thought Jar Jar Binks was No. That doomed it to me.
Okay, all right. So,
did I go too far? Too far, too soon.
So, I'm going to defend Jar Jar because when I was a kid, I was 9 years old when Star Wars came out. And I remember vividly watching the commercial on TV. And my brother David saw Chewbacca and he went, Oh, that guy, that's not going to be Chuck. You're probably going to really like that character, but I'm sure he's a pain in the butt. And so in my mind, I was like, oh, maybe I won't. But of course, we all fell in love with Chewbacca.
We did.
And so the deal is with Jar Jar.
That never happened.
He appealed to 9-year-old kids. To kids that went to go see this movie, 5, 6, 7, 8, 10, 9, all right, maybe not 10-year-olds.
Right.
But up to 9 years old, they were like, oh, this character's funny. Of course, they didn't get the whole cultural
stereotype. Right. What was Chewie? I mean, Chewie was harmless. He was like a big dog.
He's a walking carpet.
Jar Jar,
he was
not so much
ripping somebody's arms off. But besides that,
he was so do dogs occasionally.
And he was really good at that monster chess game thing. He was good at that.
That's what he wanted you to think.
Always let the Wookiee win.
Always. But then, so I take Jar Jar with a grain of salt because I know that, I mean, there are so many other flaws to the Phantom Menace. Let's talk about the pod race. Of a sudden it's like, hey, I bet you we can turn this into a video game. We need to put a big long race with a 9-year-old kid besting Sebulba.
And a duct tape spaceship.
Well, okay, so let's talk about land speeders and craft like that, because I love the concept of a land speeder. And when you get to Return of the Jedi, the bikes, whatever they're called.
The whole concept of them floating
and being able to zip through at crazy speeds. Are we anywhere near the possibility of having some kind of hover technology? Bill the Scientist?
Other than your standard helicopters?
Well, yeah.
Hovercraft? Maglev?
Yeah. Those would be propeller-based. But I'm talking about just something like, maglev,
but you got to stay on the track or over the track.
But there's nothing that's just environment independent that will just hover.
Not that
you
I
tell
know
him, Marlon.
He's like, yeah, I want that too. Come on.
Interject.
Once again, for the new to the podcast, that's our sound designer. That's Marlon, Bill's cat. Photos will be posted on our website. By the way, a brief plug, website, iHeartRocketScience.com, all spelled out. So if you have questions or comments, you can always leave them there at the website. Yeah, Marlon, I know. Marlon's not happy.
Tuna. He says send tuna.
No, Marlon's upset that you're dissing on Jar Jar.
I think just the opposite, actually.
That character was terrible.
I believe he's defending Jar Jar.
All right, so... Yes. Something I've getting the buzz on lately is like the series on, is it Disney Plus, the new
yes.
streaming service? Is it The Mandalorian?
I haven't seen it yet,
but I'm hearing a lot of people liking it.
Oh my goodness.
I haven't seen it yet.
It's so very good.
Okay. Mandalorians could do a baking show, and I think I would
Without
be
Without question. I mean, sure.
No question. Yeah.
Because they would cook everything with that jet on his wrist. He's got this flamethrower.
Right there.
Yeah.
Yep.
No spoilers, though.
No.
Might have gave away season 2 there.
Yeah, The Mandalorian is amazing. It's really good. One of the great things about The Mandalorian is that you get to go way deep in the Star Wars universe. Characters pop up like IG-88. I mentioned him earlier as a bounty hunter. You never really get to see IG-88 in working or the IG droids. You get to see one in The Mandalorian. You get to see what it's capable of, and you're like, oh my goodness, this is badass. And then you get some other characters that pop up. Like there's one character voiced by Nick Nolte, which is perfect. I just realized it's an Ugnaught. In my mind, I didn't know it was an Ugnaught. And the Ugnaughts from Return of the Jedi. They're the ones that froze Han Solo, worked on
Empire Strikes Back. Thank you.
They're the ones on Cloud City that were
responsible for maintenance, I believe.
Yeah, yep. And freezing
they know
Han Solo.
How to destroy Cloud City, by the way.
Back to the heartbeat. The Ugnaughts have
janitors
power.
Hold all power.
Yeah, so if you haven't dug into The Mandalorian and you're a fan of the Star Wars universe, it is way, way good. Because you get to see these characters that I've seen since I was a kid. And it's like, I never knew what the IG droids could do. And they're, like I say, pretty
ruthless.
Badass.
Yeah.
There you go.
Any other things? There's so many things that but I am kind of curious about the land speeder bike technology. So do you think that is that possible? Like the ability to hover and to be able to control that hover and control your position in the spatial world?
I'm skeptical.
Yeah. Okay.
I'm very skeptical.
Keith, thoughts?
We're 0-3, I think.
Yeah, we are not getting what we want. This is disappointing.
I would say I think land speeder technology may be different than speeder bike technology, if that's fair, because speeder bikes seemed like they had a much more, maybe not as nimble, but that they were more propelled, as opposed to the land speeder, which seemed to hover more. I don't know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
maybe
right.
That was just the aesthetic. Right. But
I think one of the things that I trip over a little bit is if it can hover, what stops it at 3 feet off the ground? Why doesn't it keep going?
Sure. Yeah. Right. Yeah. It's like a helium balloon.
Right. Yeah. Right. Right.
It's like there's only so much helium.
Right.
But if there's only so much helium in it, it will just stay at a certain level until you know it eventually
drops. Yeah. That's some sort of equilibrium point. Okay. So this ties right back to our lightsaber question. So another tripping point for that one for me is like it's a laser powered device, right? Or it's alluded to be a laser. Mm-hmm. Why is the laser stop 1, 2, 3 feet away?
Well, and that's what I was asking Keith earlier. He read this article that
a long time ago in a galaxy. Sorry,
far, far away.
I had to.
In a galaxy that we all live in, it's this galaxy, but it was a long time ago.
Yeah.
Okay, so one
trade routes.
Back to the trade routes again. I don't think we've spent enough time. No, okay, so one other quick thing that, Keith, you mentioned earlier. In fact, you both were talking about the X-Wings and how they're now classic cars like Mustangs.
You've got to
think that there are people all throughout the galaxy. Like, there's got to be, like, a Craigslist for X-Wings an auto trader where people can buy old crafts.
Like the aircraft, the graveyard in the desert where you can buy old airplanes.
Well, and they pimp them out. They put racing stripes on the side, and they you know put hydraulics so they can do crazy things. And I bet you there's car shows.
You got a lowrider X-wing?
Yeah, there's like Y-wing shows where everybody can get their old Y-wings together.
Y-wing lowrider.
That's a little better.
Yeah, truly. Okay. And they've got like funny horns. You know what I mean?
Yep. There
you
go. Yeah.
You've got to imagine
because it's space. No one can hear you scream, but they can hear your horn.
But they can.
When you're cruising in, you break the atmosphere. You definitely want people to know that it's a black squadron coming in that it's red squadron and blue squadron. And you got to sound off, of course.
And I mean, if you're going to do some light speed jumping, I mean, I don't think that you can blow your horn because you would far outpace the sound with your travel. So you'd be leaving a wake behind you of noise. But so I wonder if there's like an auto trader for X-Wings and Y-Wings and...
Either that or because of, again, the embargo imposed by the
We're
really reaching for my value add
here. Keith is
really
reaching.
So the resistance or the Republic, I'm
rebels,
still confused.
Whatever, yeah.
Rebels, Resistance, Republic.
Luke's team. Luke and Ray's team.
Maybe is under the pressure of embargo, not unlike Cuba, and that they haven't had an opportunity to upgrade anything.
I love it.
They're still running on 55 and 57 Chevrolets.
Successfully. Yeah, Cuba has built a culture and an environment that allows that technology
to continue
to keep them going.
And then everybody now looks in and says, kind of cool, you can ride a 57 and
didn't they
Havana.
Allude? Hang on a minute. Didn't they allude in the, what was the previous movie?
Last Jedi? Then the Force Awakens, Force Awakens, Last Jedi, and this.
Yeah, because they're on that little gambling planet where the weapons dealers, they show them, oh, look, he sells to the Empire. Oh, mm-hmm. He's also selling the X-Wings to these guys.
Right.
Yeah. So clearly they're making
an arms dealer.
But clearly they're making new versions of these things, which makes me wonder, like, why aren't they changing?
Yeah.
You know, like in today's world, like, you might fly an F-16 for, 20 years before it's like, okay, it's done. It's cooked. Can't keep, there's only so much you can do to keep it flying.
But where's the assembly line? Like, is it the Force Moon of Endor? They've blown out all the Ewoks, and now they're just creating, you know what I mean?
Like, the Ewoks regrettably survived.
Spoilers, but yes.
No, again, I'm going back to episode 6.
4, 5, 6. Yes, six. Sure. Yes, they did. But yeah, so as far as the – and then, one other thing that, this dates all the way back to the movie Clerks – where they reference the fact that, sure, we're glad that the Death Star gets destroyed, but what about all the contract laborers? They're just there, especially in Return of the Jedi, because they're building the ship. So the ship's still under construction. So there's a couple of lunch pail guys, several hundred thousand lunch pail guys that got obliterated there. And I think the same thing as we watch The Rise of Skywalker, there's some Imperial ships, and that everybody on board, okay, they drank the Kool-Aid, they became Imperial stormtroopers or whatever they are, but they're just, lunch pail Joes that are just showing up for work.
They're going to home. They got to take off their helmet and get cleaned up, have dinner with the wife and kids.
That's it. Yeah. All they're trying to do make a buck. Yeah.
They could just be named Bob.
That's it. Or Matt. Mm-hmm. Do you remember the Saturday Night Live skit of when?
Yes.
Kylo Ren was, when he
undercover boss,
and so there's a quote Matt.
Kylo Ren goes undercover on the Death Star. Mm-hmm. Or the Starkiller base, whatever it is.
Starkiller, right.
As a guy named Matt.
This is Undercover Boss Starkiller Base.
You get so caught up in restoring the galaxy to its rightful state, that you miss what's going on behind the scenes. I'm looking forward to having some real talk with some real folks.
Okay, okay, it's real easy. All you gotta do is rewire the calcinator.
So remove this?
Does that look like the calcinator? What's wrong with you? Why is it so hard for you to understand?
I don't know, but can you please stop yelling at me? You're starting to stress me out. I have a newfound respect for what my employees do.
Okay, now can we rewire it, please? So I can go have my muffin. I haven't had my muffin yet, Matt.
It's not as easy as I presumed.
You know, with this whole... Seriously, I'll post a link to it on our website.
You sure, guys, classic.
It is really great. So, okay, I think we're close to wrapping up. Any last lingering thoughts, questions? I would definitely recommend go see The Rise of Skywalker. Okay, so as a longtime fan, yes or no? Enjoy it? Like, was it good? Was it too dense? Was there too much? Was there not enough of a payoff for you without spoiling anything?
Rise of Skywalker, right?
Rise of Skywalker, the most recent, yeah.
I think so. I think it definitely appealed to, you know, the lifelong card members, as it were, of the Federation. Or, geez.
The Alliance.
Trade Federation. There you go. I think it was... Maybe not as, and this is my own opinion, but maybe not as good as Avengers Endgame, but it was trying to accomplish the same thing, you know, kind of a sound off to all the things that we remember and hold kind of dear. Maybe even a nod to Jar Jar, maybe not, I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah, what I think I liked about it, I am the least critical person when I go to a movie. I really just am happy to be in the theater.
Sure.
So I don't get super analytical. It's like, oh my goodness, how did they drop the ball? And I was just overwhelmed. I mean, right. There were moments in this movie where I was just like, oh, it's so great they brought that character back. Oh my goodness, that happened. Oh, that ship is there. You know, like the whole, and that's exactly what J.J. Abrams did.
Right.
It was a good story. It was entertaining. And there were just so many little gifts that you
sound
were
up to the fans. Yeah.
Yeah. And the... I wish I knew the character's name. The new little tiny character that works on C-3PO.
Right.
Now I want to see a movie with just that character.
Makes the Porgs pale in comparison.
The Porgs were pretty cool, but this new character, so very good. Okay, so Bill, you got to see it.
All right.
The conversation's not done. We do have a Facebook page, Ask a Rocket Scientist. You can find us on Facebook, and you can also go to our website, iHeartRocketScience.com. There'll be a nice little place there. You can add comments. You can let us know your thoughts on Star Wars. If you're a fan of the new movie, if you hate the new movie, we'd love to find out. And then if you have any other questions, we could do a kind of a follow-up episode down the road, answering more of your Star Wars questions. But we would love to get more feedback from you. Let us know if there's other things that while we were discussing, you had a thought and wanted to share it with us. We'd love to hear from you again. iHeartRocketScience.com. The website. You can find us on Facebook at Ask a Rocket Scientist. I think that's those are good ways to get a hold of us. Keith, thank you for stepping in and bringing your Trade Federation knowledge.
There you go.
Your global economics knowledge to the table. It really did add a little,
I guess.
And Bill, as usual, couldn't do this without you. Wouldn't want to do this without you.
Oh,
it isn't
you,
a show without Bill Scaff, my rocket scientist. And I'm your resident science idiot, Chuck Woodford. Thank you so much for tuning in, and we'll do this again soon.
Ask a Rocket Scientist could be brought to you by you. Get your product or service the attention it deserves on a high-quality professional podcast. For more info, go to iHeartRocketScience.com.
The Force will be with you always.